down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, hello, good afternoon, Australia.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, hi. So as I was saying, so then the other option that the people on the TAP program is that they had the opportunity to pay installments, to pay road tax in installments. Where the PSV sector had to pay their taxes in full, right? And the other thing is that there were flexible routes apart. They have no route really assigned to them. They go wherever they get assigned to go. They have flexible routes. Well, the PSV sector are assigned to Pacific route. Another thing is that when these guys came into the industry, they were allowed to work with their vehicles and whatever color they were. Actually, I saw black ZR yesterday, right? But in order for the other guys in the private sector to be able to operate their vehicles, they had to be white with a maroon stripe down through the middle. Now that was an additional cost. And you know, the people that recently came into the industry benefited significantly from that. Another thing is the paying NIS clearances. Now, in order to operate a PSV vehicle in Barbados, you must pay, your NIS clearances must be up to this par. And if you have any taxes outstanding, you will not be able to register that vehicle. I'm not sure if these guys actually pay NIS contributions. Right, I'm really not sure if these guys pay NIS contributions. But you know, from what I've said to you so far, if you look at the similarity, you will see that it is really tilted a kind of, you know, against the guys that were there for a while.
Okay. All right, sir. Thanks for calling.
And the last thing before we go that I want to look at too is that the capacity, the housing capacity. Now, you got a great number of PSV vehicles that are on the road, right? And before this government came into office, they were accusing the former government of issuing permits and things. So, really and truly, they had issued too much PSV permits on the road. But the difference between them and this government is that this government is also issuing, but they're using, though, this is the top program here, but at the end of the day, the competition is still becoming a lot more intense. So when you're bringing in a great volume of vehicle into one marketplace, and you don't really have the market for that industry, you actually can create havoc. So running and implementing a million laws and stuff like that really is not going to solve the problem. What is really going to solve the problem is a good hard look at the industry and creating fair play right across the board. If there's no duty free or no other taxes or anything that's being waived for one, it should be so for the other. So that's all I'm saying. So if you got more weight upon one industry and it is laid upon the other industry, the one that feels the most weight will shout the hardest.
Where's the consumer, this traveling public and all of this? And to me, the most important person out of all of this is the person that you are serving as the traveling public. And they matter. Their view matters. Okay? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Ms. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
There are two things I want to discuss today. One, I'm going to be brief. The guy that was speaking about the electric buses. I work at an institution where I had two cranes. One can lift 60 tons, and one can lift 25 tons. So it's just a matter of transferring the, getting a transmission with the gear ratio that can carry along the bus. So is the bus thing really in a problem, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm an engineer? You know, with 60 tons of electric crane lifting, this true, the electric crane can lift it slower. So it's just a matter of the gear ratio to get the bus moving faster. But then we call this guy an election. Because honestly and true, this is my belief. I feel the world is trying to stop black people from running as president in Ghana. According to what I am hearing, there are 115,000 votes that can't be accounted for. You ain't got the verification for them, but them there. And that is what they want the Ghana government to accept. I can't accept that, Ms. Ellis. I don't live there, but I can't accept that. And if that is what they want to push, they are pushing black people from running government in Guyana. That is my opinion. What will you have to say?
Not a thing.
Huh?
Not a thing. As I told you, it is a highly contentious issue. when things get to this point on this program, as far as I'm concerned, my mission here is to listen to people with contending views. That's where I am on this particular issue here, okay? Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program.
Sir, a blessed day to you, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
I trust that a beautiful weekend for you, the family, the Barbados, and the station in general, because these trying times, we all need that, and to need upon, depend upon God to help us out of these situations, because man has always been trying to control and do things that he wants to do when he like, how he like, and if he like, without any recognition of his maker, you know? He's not in it at all, as far as they're concerned. I see that in spite of the education that we have and are encouraged to continue to build on it, that when the slave masters ask us to jump, we are still prone to ask, how high do they want us to jump? And I am saying that based on what is happening in the Caribbean and in Guyana especially. Now, only a few days ago, I've heard on the news that the United States is again wielding their big dictatorship stick. They just said that any country that have encouraged or hosted the Cuban nurses, that they are going to be taking sanctions against them. And of course, you know, that Barbados has just had help from the Cubans. Now, how high should we in Barbados ask them, how high would they want us to jump? The United States, as far as I am concerned, are not interested in the progress or the help of the humanity. Their interest is in the control of the humanity. This is what I'm noticing. You would remember, Mr. Ellis, many years ago, and I'm sure that you would have heard Mr. Barr's speeches on Barr's Day and so on. And one of those speeches said, when Mr. Barr was speaking, he said, if the United States, and it was the Secretary General, one of them who he was saying, if they would be so drunk to come down here in the Caribbean and tell us how to solve our problem. And it is still happening. The United States backyard, front yard, side yard is dirty. And they are asking us now to, and they are now voicing their opinion and saying to Guyana President, step down. And they are doing all kind of nastiness down there. Now look what they're now asking us, saying, if we encourage or host Cuban nurses, they're going to take action against us. Who in the world for a nation is telling them that what they are now attempting to do to us and those others that are encouraging or that are helping, getting help from the Cuban, who are telling them that they're wrong? Can you tell me that? Who are asking them to jump? Who are asking them not to interfere? Is there anybody who is asking them to do that?
We live in a country where, as small as it is, people complain that might is right in Barbados. Do you agree with me on that?
People are saying that, but that does not mean that it is right.
Excuse me.
It is not right.
Excuse me. I didn't ask you whether it's right. I ask you whether you accept that in Barbados there is a perception that might is right.
Perception is not true. That is just, that's
okay, so there is, when you look across the landscape in Barbados, you feel that there is equality and fairness?
Perception
do you?
Perception is not truth, Mr.
What is the truth?
perception.
Because I'm saying to you, you talk about America and its policy of might is right, and I agree with you on that. But I can say to you that even within a country like this, we operate that way. In many instances, the world is operating that way. Might is right. We don't necessarily agree with it. But we also have to come to terms with the reality that this notion of sovereignty is something that is more a myth than a reality. All America needs to do for many of the countries in the Caribbean is to say that your airport is not fit for planes to land at, for jet planes to land at it. And that's the end of you. Okay? So, you all sound to me as though you just wake up. This has long been the reality. The question is, how do you respond to that if you feel that way?
So, what you are saying to me...
You don't really have the sovereignty that you talk about.
Based on what you have just said, you are saying to me that there's nothing wrong with it.
I'm not saying that.
You are saying to me...
I just said to you that I don't agree with the concept of might is right, but it is our reality. It is as prevalent in a country like this on a day-to-day basis as it is in the international community, where America can do things like say you can't try my soldiers before the International Court of Justice, no matter what they have done in Afghanistan. But on the other hand, we'll seek to apply America's form of justice to other countries. So that is the world in which we live.
Do you remember, Mr. Ellis, that they came down here some years ago with a document asking Caribbean Islands to sign on that document, giving them the right to come into your country and take who they want to take, but you cannot do, you will have to let them try their people. And when they came to Barbados, when under the Onassis regime, when Mr. Simmons said to them, it will not happen here, and they had to revise that. Do you remember that? As much as might be right, I am saying to you that Arabar stood up and called Reagan a cowboy. A man who stood with principle on his 2 feet.
Yeah, but you know what?
You want to say
You know what? You know what? You need to stop and think about where Barbados was then and where it is now. Especially in this COVID period, where we have taken a beating economically. And you have to ask yourself whether we have the strength to be able to get up and tell a Trump administration, which has been more naked than any other administration that we've seen in our lifetime, more aggressive in posture, and speak to America in the same way that the Barbados Labour Party spoke to America over Ship Rider, and what the right excellent Errol Barrow said when he called Reagan a cowboy. Do you believe that we are in the same position today?
Mr. Ellis, you know, I
are you going to stand on principle as far as you see it?
I don't really believe that you will be asking me that. When I'm saying to
answer
you
it then.
Let me show you. There has always been a need in Barbados. Always has been a need. That we have always had to depend on the tourist industry. We have always had to...
And we have always had a situation similar to COVID, right?
But you wait a minute.
Where bottom drops out of the tourism sector.
Don't go so fast. Don't try to distract me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't try to distract. Because I am saying to you that we have always had needs in Barbados. We've always had to depend on the tourist dollar. We've always had to buy our goods with the tourist dollar. And today it is the same principle where we've always had to, we have to borrow money as well. We did it before. So I am saying to you, that does not mean that you've got to prostrate yourself under the might of those who believe that they should control you.
What would you recommend, therefore?
You know what I'm going to point to you? When God made man, he made man with his free
What would you recommend, therefore?
I am saying to you, my recommendation is to tell them that the people in the Caribbean has a right and they have their people, they're educated, that they can deal. And look, we have a matter still before the law court in Guyana, still before the court. And I know your station have said before that when a matter is before the law court in Barbados, you can't call one thing that you're... Moderator said, is that before the court and everything? We can't discuss it here. But here we have a situation where a matter is still before the law court, and you've got the United States and all that issuing statements to intimidate those who are going to be sitting in judgment over a matter. In other words, they are telling them what is going to happen up front if they don't do this. No, tell me.
I hope you come to terms with the geopolitical reality. That's all I'm asking you to do. And after Barbados has taken its principled stand, and Caribbean countries have done similarly, then what? Then what? Because you can take it, but that does not change the reality that America is operating the way that it is. And what they have just proposed, the Republicans have just proposed out of Florida to penalize Caribbean countries that have gotten assistance from Cuba over the COVID period, is pandering to their constituents. You know, everybody is pandering to their constituents. Whether it is in Guyana, Barbados, the United States, or Florida, that is the part of that reality as well. And it is trying to understand what room you have to maneuver in all of this, dealing with competing interests and that sort of thing, that makes the politician outstanding or creates a failure for a politician. This is Down to Brass Tacks. It's now 1:32 in the afternoon. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm fine, thanks for now. From the outset, let me say that I'm very appreciative of the importation of the electric buses, because Ms. Motley and her team, in less than a quarter of the time, the Dems had did more for commuters, in, at least as it relates to the importation of the buses. Mm-hmm. But of course, like with most other things this government involves itself with, there are more questions than answers. Mr. Ellis, if you take a good look at these buses, you'll realize that they don't carry passenger windows. That means that there will be a daily, continuous use of the air conditioning parts, such as the fans, the blower motor, the refrigerant pipes, etc., etc. So does the government have their air conditioning parts put down in storage so that in the future, faulty parts can be changed quickly? Because if they have to wait for replacement parts to be imported, it means the buses will have to come off the road in the meantime. Because surely you can't expect people to traverse in buses lacking ventilation. Another concern of mine relates to the per charge cycle of the batteries. How many kilometers does a single bus travel before the battery needs to be recharged? And in the off chance that a bus breaks down mid-route, has the government acquired mobile charge stations that drive to where the bus is to provide them with a fast charge to last the remainder of the journey? And finally, one of the reasons why owning an electric car could be so frustrating is because when too many of these cells in the battery degrade, you need to replace the entire battery with a new one. And most of the time, the new battery costs so much money that people prefer to get rid of the entire car altogether and switch to a different car because the price of the electric battery is just too prohibitive. So it begs a few questions. What is the overall lifespan of these batteries? What is the cost to replace the batteries, and who will be granted the contract to import the replacement batteries? Furthermore, since the batteries are so harmful to the environment, how will this government dispose of the old used batteries? So even though I am thankful that this government has imported the buses, there are still quite a few questions that need to come to the public and address.
And that is the direction that I have been going in on this matter. It is not that you don't appreciate the fact that something has been done to try to ease the problem. But remember this, you're making a fundamental shift.
Yeah, correct.
And because you're making a fundamental shift in an entity that has had all sorts of problems, because you remember, that coming out of the difficulties faced by the transport board, they went in the direction of creating UCAL. Remember that?
Yeah.
All right. And that never seemed to work in the way that you expected it to.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are making this kind of shift. It is important to answer questions such as these. What is unfortunate about some of the reaction that I have had to putting this matter on the table is that some people are immediately saying, oh, you don't, you know, the government reacted to trying to improve the situation, and rather than accept it, people just critical. It is not about being critical. It's about trying to get an understanding of what are the implications of the shift. Because ultimately what's likely to happen here is that after a couple of months of operation, when people start to feel some difficulties coming with respect to these buses, you will then hear the question, so why is it that these things were not explored before? Why is it that people didn't talk about it? Why didn't we have people asking questions about it? And you know, to sit down here and just accept that the government has made an effort, a positive effort, to do something about a problem, and just accept that without more, to my mind, is irresponsible. Totally irresponsible. That's not, I mean, I'm shocked to see the number of people who are coming with this kind of argument. And I think the points that you have raised are some of the issues that somebody within the administration, within the Ministry of Transport, the first responsibility lies with the people at the Transport Board, and then within the Ministry of Transport, to indicate how are we going to respond to those questions. The lifestyle, the lifetime of the batteries, the replacement costs associated with it, and things like that. Yes, you were saying?
No, I was just saying, right, that one of the things that I learned when I was doing my bachelor's in management is that whenever you're going to engage in a project, you first have to do not only market research, but you also have to do analysis, and very strong analysis, relating to if the project that you're getting into is going to be feasible and is going to return profit that, you know, can manage itself and also give you a surplus of income.
And one assumes assumes that they have done all of that.
That's what I'm about to say now, Mr. Ellis, that I would assume that after purchasing so many buses in an electric industry that you really don't have that much experience in, that you would have done your research. And therefore, when people like myself come to the public and ask questions, I would hope that they will have the answers to the questions, because they should have done their research before importing so many buses at one time. Well, thank you, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you very much. And I don't think, quite honestly, I don't think that it is out of place to ask the government to share more information with the public of Barbados about what are the implications of making this kind of shift. As desirable as it is to make a shift, we still need to be satisfied, in the interests of transparency and accountability. Don't forget that it wasn't so long ago we used to hear those words coming at us time and time again. And it can be out of place, and it can be mischievous to be asking those types of questions and expecting that somebody is going to give us answers. This is not only about casting all sorts of criticism and aspersions on what the former administration did. The people of Barbados voted out the last administration because partly they were dissatisfied with the way that they used to handle public information. All right? They expect better now. This is down to brass tacks.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. I'd like to comment on the bus situation, but I have a different perspective, if you would allow me a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we kind of missed a brilliant opportunity to grow and create a new industry in Barbados. And I'll say it this way. We ended up buying 40-odd electric buses, which for all intents and purposes were built as a kit. Somebody bought the electric motors, the batteries, the components, they all assembled them and they sold them. We bought them. I don't believe that we should have done that. We had the opportunity. We have the opportunity to become an electrification. Let me rephrase what I'm saying. We have the opportunity to become a leader in the Caribbean within electrification, with specific regards to vehicles and public transport. What I believe we should have done is to hire 3 or 5 technical experts. Bring in these individuals, launch a project using the Barbados, the Polytechnic. That would raise the acclaim of the Polytechnic being associated with some sort of international project. We would train local persons to be able to assemble, troubleshoot, and support these buses. But then further to that, before my time, I'm 42 years old, I was told that we had a bus industry in Barbados where we made Hino buses. Why is it that the government could not look to create some sort of new bus manufacturing project where we now create skills in that aspect? We can then add diesel motors if we wanted. Can you allow me to finish my point, please, sir? I'm saying that we have. I'm looking at it from a position of diversification. So if we create a market where we build our own buses from scratch, everything, there are some markets that will still not want electrical buses. We should not isolate ourselves and reduce the market. Therefore, we will still sell the traditional diesel bus if somebody wanted. But the point I'm making is that we could create an industry where we create a bus industry. We are the leaders in creating electrical vehicles in the region. And then we export said buses to St. Vincent, Grenada, etc., etc. There have been people saying that these buses may have issues pulling hills, etc. It's all about torque. Electric motors just provide torque, instant torque. Torque is what moves things. So therefore, if you have a bus with enough power, it doesn't matter the hill. Now, the runtime obviously is affected by the gradient of the hill, the runtime, etc., etc. But the point that I'm making is that we've missed an opportunity to have a long-term project that benefits Barbados, creates foreign exchange, we get to keep some of our brand power, and there's a snowball effect that could be created, and we become leaders in this region. We've also got the private sector. We've already got buy-in with the renewable energy market. We have people like Busy Williams, who has invested heavily. We have other companies. We know we have a mandate to be 100% renewable by 2030, I think it was. This all fits into line. We can market this. Then the BTI can grab onto this, and then we can market that. Come to Barbados. We produce X amount. Use statistics to our advantage. This is it is not that difficult or not that hard. So I believe that as opposed to buying buses, where we have to pay people to come to fix them, and then we still have to pay and outsource and do all this, this is just money out. We are not learning anything. We are still in a consumer phase. We have to go beyond that. We've been looking for ways to diversify Barbados away from
Okay. So I assume that I can now give a response. I assume so. So let me say, first of all, I appreciate the urgency of the moment that the government faced. We had no buses for a long time. The government had to find an urgent fix. It promised an urgent fix in the election campaign. And therefore, I could appreciate that that's what it was trying to address. So I don't think it had all the time in the world to develop the kind of industry that you are talking about. That's more long term. It was looking for an immediate solution. I raise the question of diesel. I do not believe that Barbadians should be putting any emphasis on diesel vehicles. Diesel fumes have now been associated with cancer and stuff in other countries. You remember that big discussion that they had in the United States about the Volkswagen vehicles and how they misled the authorities that they were able to suppress the fumes from the diesel vehicles, because one of the big concerns there had to do with that particular problem of the illnesses that can be associated with diesel vehicles. Barbados should be phasing them out rather than encouraging more of those vehicles in the country. And it is unfortunate that we are in a state where so many people are still pushing that line, ignoring the health consequences associated with it. But the main point I want to make to you, sir, is that the government didn't have a lot of time. All I'm saying is, I appreciate that, I also still think that there is room to look at whether at the decision that has been made and its implications. That's what I'm saying. All right. Down to brass tacks. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, Mr. Ellis, how are you doing?
I'm okay, and you?
I am well, thanks. I am a first-time caller.
Yes.
I just want to weigh in on the bus issue that I hear everybody commenting about today. I work on the road, right? And I work driving one of the same electrical vehicles.
Yes.
And what I can say is that the vehicles work perfectly. We were a little skeptical at first in acquiring the vehicles.
When you say the vehicles, you mean what, for transport board vehicles or?
Well, the vehicle that I knew.
Is a transport board vehicle, or that's a private vehicle?
It is a commercial vehicle, but it is a smaller vehicle.
Okay.
But what I am saying is that in regards to the travel, the distance it covers, the amount of weight it can carry, it surpassed everything and more than the previous vehicle that I had used to do.
But you're making the point, just one point. It's not a bus, a transport board type bus that you drove before.
Right. So the difference is, right, is I don't know these specific specs that the transport board bus has in terms of battery capacity, right? But what I can compare to you in that effect in that my van can carry up to about 800 pounds inside the vehicle and move off from start to finish like there's nothing inside the vehicle. Climbs hill the same way, like there's nothing inside the vehicle. It works perfectly from that regard, right? So what I'm saying to you is that depending on the specific battery range the transport board bus has, it can carry that load up the hills, chalk him out, whatever, with ease. I work the entire day on the road. My vehicle can travel from Christchurch to St. Lucie and back on one charge. Comes in the evening, we plug it in, it recharges overnight, and is ready to go the following morning. So I know there's a lot of people who are skeptical because it is relatively a new technology introduced into Barbados, but I can say from experience, driving the vehicle, the electric vehicle I am driving, they work really well.
I just want to say to you that personally I am not skeptical about the electric technology or the hybrid technology. I'm not skeptical about it at all. I'm just saying that when you make when you look at the transport board, it is one thing to compare your vehicle with the last one you drove, but we are dealing here with a fleet of buses for the transport board, which has made a significant change, largely because the movement away from fossil fuels is also desirable. But there are still these questions that people will have about the transition, and it is important to share with members of the public what are the implications, the pros and the cons, beyond just saying, well, you've made the transition for fossil fuel purposes. Because, you know, that's essentially what is being said here, you know. We are not coming down on the side of saying it's a good decision, bad decision. We're saying let's hear a bit more about this decision so that we will be in a better position to either appreciate it or to see what we should do differently. What are we going to expect? That's all I'm saying about it.
Right.
Okay.
One more point I just want to add. My company, as I said earlier, we were skeptical. We firstly acquired two of the vehicles, electric vehicles, to compare the cost of running the electric vehicle and the diesel vehicle parallel to see the pros and cons, basically. And based on how the electric vehicle performed in regards to the diesel vehicle, it was a no-brainer, basically. So we don't just have one vehicle. We have an entire fleet of electric vehicles. And it is running the entire company. And the maintenance cost is way lower in comparison to the diesel vehicles. I heard the caller previously was commenting on the battery and how expensive the batteries are. That is true. But from my point of view and from our company's point of view, the electric battery carries a 10-year warranty on the battery. I don't know if that same warranty is with the transport board and their vehicles and their batteries. That's a question you must find out. But if there's anything wrong within that 10-year, before that 10-year warranty is out, you basically get in a new battery because they give you a 10-year warranty.
That's true in your case, but we don't know what the deal is between the transport board and whoever they get your buses from. So those are the types of things that, seriously, at some point, I suspect they may very well go to Parliament and talk about it, but I submit to you that there's still a need to explain all of that to the satisfaction of the traveling public and the paying public. And this all has to be looked at in the context of all that has been said about the transparency accountability issues, and to satisfy taxpayers that their money is well spent. I really think that we are in a serious situation if people believe that this kind of question would only be relevant if the Democratic Labour Party was in office. It is as relevant to the Dems as it is to the Barbados Labour Party as well. So, and as I pointed out, it has nothing to do with being mischievous. It has nothing to do with being negative. It is just to make sure that we remain consistent when we talk about transparency and accountability to the public of Barbados. Now, the government may have a timetable that says it wants to talk about it next week, 2 weeks from now. From where I sit, whenever the government wants to talk about it, we establish that there is still a need to let us know let us get the answers to some of these questions. All right, that's it for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I want to thank you all very much, and thanks to the technical operator and producer, John Stout. I am David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.